Decentraland Podcast with David Amoyala.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. We are thrilled that you're joining us for a pre-Christmas episode of the Calcio Land podcast. So with January around the windows, a lot of buzz on transfers. So let's start talking about two juicy transfer rumors. One involves your team, Alex. We're joined by our great friend and co-host and producer, Alex Goldberg. David Luiz, I was on Sirius XM on Monday night, and they asked me about this rumor on David Luiz potentially joining Juve, and recently, in the past few days, there's been some buzz that Bonucci could be leaving Milan in January. That might be of interest to your team, Alex, as well. So let me ask you, which of these two things is more likely, in your opinion, David Luiz heading to Juve or Bonucci leaving Milan in January?
All right, David, I'm going to take a unique approach in answering this question. I'm certainly not going to base my answer on what's happening with David Luiz and Chelsea at the moment or what's happening with Bonucci and Milan. I mean, for heaven's sake, David Luiz is injured. Plus, if he was healthy, he still probably would not be starting. Antonio Conte has fallen in love, rightfully so, with young center back Andreas Christensen. Not to mention yesterday in a Chelsea League Cup game. Oh, this is great. I get to talk about a Chelsea League Cup game. But anyway, they started 17-year-old Ethan Empadu, who looks like he's trying to become David Luiz if you look at his hair. But nonetheless, it's very hard to get a read on what's happening with David Luiz and the actual club of Chelsea. Having said that, I'm still going to say it's way less likely that David Luiz joins Juventus. And I'm basing that solely on something you taught me here on this very Calcioland podcast. And that's something that Antonio Cassano said about Juventus. They like the good soldier. Patrice Evra didn't last long at Juve. Dani Alves did not last long at Juve. They like the company guy, the guy to stay in line. David Luiz is not bad for club chemistry. He's actually very well liked by his teammates, but he's a clown. He's a goofball. It would be very hard to imagine him in the black and white of the old lady. So quite simply, I'm solely basing my answer off of the fact that David Luiz is too goofy for Juventus. And I can flip that around and say Alexandro probably will never come to Chelsea from Juventus because he seems like he's the opposite of David Luiz, a quiet company guy. So my answer, David Luiz, no way he's going to Juventus. What about you, David? What do you think?
So I'm going to come to the same answer, but I'm going to take a different path. So yeah, I agree. I think the David Luiz to Juve story started in the sense that, A, he's on the outs of Chelsea. He's a player that is pretty similar in style to Bonucci, very good passer. And I think all these rumors started because Juve last summer didn't technically replace Bonucci. But we've talked a lot about it on the podcast. Benatti has been sensational recently between Chiellini, Barzagli, Rugani. I think they have cover there, so I don't see that happening. On top of those four that I mentioned, Juve has Caldara coming from Atalanta next summer. So I'm going to say David Luiz to Juve. That would absolutely shock me. Bonucci leaving Milan would shock me, but nowhere near as much. I think a lot of I've seen legit people. This isn't something reported on Di Marzio's side, but I've seen other people that I trust. One of my good friends in Turin, Romeo Agresti, who's great covering Juve, had a tweet on Bonucci having mal di pancia, which in Italy means, stomach ache, which is when a player is not too happy with his situation. I think a lot of it, too, was driven that after Milan's loss to Verona, Bonucci was in Turin having dinner with Chiellini, Barzagli, and Bonucci. I think that created a lot of buzz for that. So I definitely don't think Bonucci is going back to Juve if he were to leave Milan. I could see him in the Premier League. I think your team, Chelsea, because of Antonio Conte, is always a factor, but I could really see him at Manchester City if that happens, or PSG, because they could use another defender as well. But it would really surprise me if Bonucci leaves in January. A couple of reasons. A, it would really be for Milan, who's already struggling a lot, to see their key signing of the summer leave. Already the tide isn't particularly good with them. That would be kind of an admission of defeat. Also, you know, Bonucci has an enormous salary. Granted, for Manchester City and PSG, they'd be able to afford it. And he was signed for a huge transfer fee that's barely been amortized. So a team would have to basically match the 40 million euro that Milan paid. So I don't think Bonucci is going to leave in January. Wouldn't shock me in the summer. He is going to turn 31 next year, two seasons in a row with no Champions League. At his age, on top of the fact that he's not playing in the World Cup because Italy didn't qualify, is a lot. So this one is one to look at. But again, David Luiz to Juve, I'm going to pretty much exclude it. Bonucci leaving Milan, I'm going to say more likely in the summer than now. So now, before we get to our interviews and your great Twitter questions, let's get into previewing the Serie A weekend. We have our Oracle from Italy, 1,000 Names, send us in some picks for some matches. As a reminder, because of Christmas around the corner, the Serie A action starts tomorrow, and most of the games are on Saturday. So 1,000 Names sent me three predictions. The first one is Sassuolo-Inter. He has it as 1-1, goals by Falcinelli and Perisic. His comment is lucky Luciano, and this is Spalletti, lost his way after the great performance at Allianz Stadium against Juve. And he said this match is going to be a sign that Vidal is really needed at Inter. There's been a lot of buzz on this one. So I'm going to agree. Actually, let me read it in Italian first, because we have a lot of people tuning in from Italy to hear what Thousand has picked. So, pronostico Sassuolo-Inter 1-1, Falcinelli-Perisic, Lucky Luciano ha smarrito la via dopo aver sbancato l'Allianz Stadium, serve Vidal. I'm going to agree with Thousands. Sassuolo has actually been doing better since new manager Iacchini came on board. Inter's coming off the Pordenone match and the loss at home to Udinese. I'm going to agree. I could see this 1-1, but I think it's going to be a goal by Icardi, and I think Matri is going to keep his streak going. The next is the big match of the weekend on Saturday that I hope we get to watch together, Alex. And this is Juve-Roma. So 1,000 Names has it as 1-1, goals by Dybala and Dzeko. His comment is Allegri is going to botch another big match. He says Juve without Mandzukic can't score. Mandzukic had an injury. He had like a pretty significant he had to really do a lot to get back in shape, so it doesn't look like he's going to play. Thousand says that Douglas Costa is the bust of the year and that Rummenigge, the CEO at Bayern Munich, still laughing from that sale. I disagree with that. Let me read it in Italian first. 1-1, Juve-Roma 1-1, Dybala-Dzeko, Allegri fallisce un altro big match dopo l'Inter, segna Mandzukic, squadra che non segna. Douglas Costa, bidone dell'anno, Rummenigge ride. I'm actually pretty bullish on Juve in this match. I think they're really starting to peak now. I have Juve winning this one 2-0. I know Roma has a great defense. I'm going to say Dybala and Bernardeschi are going to score in this one. Last match prediction by 1,000 Names is Napoli plays at home against Sampdoria. He has goals by the great offensive trio, so a goal each from Mertens, Insigne, and Callejon. His comment is Sampdoria manager Gianpaolo has lost his mind after beating Juve. The team has really struggled since that match. And he says Sarri is going to be the winter champion. So Napoli's at the top of the standing. If they win this match, they are going to be the winter champions. And Serie A, I agree with Thousand. I think Napoli is going to win. I think it's going to be a little bit closer. I have it as 2-0. I think Hamsik is going to score and pass Maradona's goal record at Napoli, and I'm going to give Mertens another goal. I didn't read it in Italian, so let me read it. Mertens insigne Caleon, Gianpaolo dopo aver asfaltato la Juve non ne azzecca mezza, Sarri campione d'inverno. Other couple of matches to keep in mind, Lazio plays at home against Crotone. Milan, who's been on retreat at Milanello all week, plays at home against Atalanta. That's actually going to be a tough match for Milan, so let's see what happens. So, Alex, one more round of the great questions from our listeners. We're always so impressed with what you guys send in using the CalcioLand hashtag. So which ones are we going to go over tonight, Alex?
All right, David. Now that we are at the halfway mark of the season, what is your ideal starting 11 in Serie A?
Great question. So I put a lot of thought into this today. So for here's my 11. I have it kind of the formation is kind of a 4-3-3 that allowed me to fit most of the players that I wanted to put in. So at the goalie position, I have Roma keeper Alisson. Roma has the best defense in Serie A, so I wanted to highlight them. Was very close to picking Inter keeper Handanovic, who's been sensational. And a shout out to Spal keeper Gomis. Been fantastic this season. He's kept a highly rated prospect Mire on the bench. Gomis has been so busy. It's like being Trump's press secretary. Every match, there's like so many disasters, so many fires you have to put out, so many tough questions, so many shots on goal coming to you. So although I didn't pick him over Alisson, I wanted to give him a shout out. My defense has Inter right back D'Ambrosio, Roma left back Kolarov, who's been sensational. My two center backs are Koulibaly from Napoli and Skriniar from Inter. My midfield has three players. I have Jorginho, I have Pjanic from Juve. I've never been a huge Pjanic guy, but he's been really sensational and more consistent this season. We have Milinkovic-Savic, of course. I keep getting questions on him, which is great. Someone asked me if I think he would fit in at Manchester United. I think he's so versatile and he's so strong that he'd do well anywhere. It doesn't really matter who's around him. I think he'd be perfect for the Premier League. So that's my midfield, Jorginho, Pjanic, Milinkovic-Savic. And my attack features Lazio winger Luis Alberto, definitely the most improved player in Serie A. Mauro Icardi, central striker, and I'm going to move Mertens to the wing to kind of fit my 4-3-3. So I have some really tough omissions. I thought Immobile, prior to Italy being eliminated by Sweden, was probably the most valuable player in Serie A. But after that match, kind of like Belotti, he's really struggled. I think psychologically he suffered from that. I really wanted to include Perisic from Inter, but I couldn't keep Mertens off. I really wanted to include Torreira on Sampdoria, a player we've talked a lot about on the show. I wanted to include Jorginho as well. On defense, I really liked Fazio on Roma, Chiellini on Juve. I thought it's having a very good season when healthy. Goulam as well, before the injury, I think it was between him and Collaro for best left back. In the midfield, I really wanted to put Cristante as well from Atalanta. Been really, really good. Bonaventura recently been sensational under Gattuso, not so much under Montella. And I think Suso as well for Milan has had his moments. So that's my honorable mentions are those players. And that's my best 11 so far in Serie A.
Okay, David, next Twitter question. Could Milan sell off a big player in January, seeing their financial situation and place in the standings?
So shout out to my colleague Zeke, who sent that in. He's the longest tenured member on Di Marzio's staff. He's been on my team for quite some time. So he's a big fan of the show, and I'm glad he sent in this question. So we talked about Bonucci at the top. I think more in the summer. I think in January it's going to be tough for Milan to sell big names. Again, a lot of the new acquisitions, they really haven't amortized their transfer fees quite yet. Of the players they already had on the team, I can't see them selling Romagnoli, Bonaventura, and Suso. Suso just signed an extension. I could see, though, maybe Andres Silva and Kalanoglu being loaned out. They've really struggled. Interestingly, Milan executive director Fassone mentioned there's a couple of players that they kind of regret signing, and I wonder if he meant these two. I wouldn't be shocked if they were loaned out. I think more in the summer we'll see more movement at Milan, because by then some of those transfer fees will be amortized and it's easier to make big moves in the summer.
All right. It seems like a growing trend that the majority of Milan signings never work out, and once they leave, they regain their form. Why do you think this is happening?
It's a great question. And I think last year there was a weekend where something like seven former Milan players all scored the same weekend, the weekend that Milan lost. So there's definitely something to this trend. I think, to be honest, the main reason is bad coaching. I mean, Milan really hasn't had any standout coaches. Even Montella never had a set formation. We had a lot of turnover with other managers. And I think to all the uncertainty surrounding the club with the ownership situation is definitely having an impact. My New Year resolution for Milan is I really hope that in 2018 we no longer talk about the ownership situation. I hope we don't talk so often about the glory days and the great players of the past, and that we start talking about Milan winning, and so there's less uncertainty. So the coaching and the uncertainty are the two reasons why I think when players leave, they tend to do better.
Okay, this next Twitter question I really like. Which Serie A team would be a good fit for Henrik Mkhitaryan? Would Napoli seem like a good fit?
I don't think Napoli is a good fit because offensively and in the midfield, they're loaded. There's been a lot of buzz about Inter, and I think there is something to this because Inter needs a creative midfielder. They have a great relationship with Mourinho, who I think would be very happy to help his former club. The only caveat to this is that Inter recently has really never done business with a Mkhitaryan's agent, Mino Raiola. They've gone out of their way not to, but maybe if they can get Mkhitaryan on loan and not have to deal too much with Raiola and do more with Mourinho, that could happen. Wouldn't shock me if we see Mkhitaryan in Serie A, and in the past he's been linked to Juve. Granted, they don't really have a need there, but more than Napoli, I would say Inter might be a good fit for him.
Honestly, Borussia Dortmund probably should not have got rid of him. I think they were meant for each other. And honestly,
that's a great point.
It hasn't gone
it's
well.
It's been a loss for everyone there.
Well said. All right. After the Coppa Italia match against Udinese, Sarri mentioned Unas and Jaccherini were rusty, and that was his fault. Do you think he'll change his ways with turnover?
Love Sarri. We've talked a lot about it, but he's one of those stubborn people from Tuscany. I'll believe it when I see it. I can see why he said that. Maybe he was defending his players, but let me see it in a Serie A match, even starting maybe with this one against Sampdoria, or one next in the new year when he has multiple matches a week. That's when I'll believe it, when he actually does it. I have a feeling he was maybe defending his players more than anything else.
Fair enough. All right, David, after what happened in PSG's last match, is Pastore to Inter more likely?
So for those that didn't see it, Pastore yesterday played. His agent before the match said this could be his last match at PSG. After the match, he was crying. Now, this could be a very good omen for Inter. Interisti listening to this probably remember at the end of the summer, Cancelo played his last match for his club in Spain and was crying, and then ended up at Inter. So maybe that's what happens. This week I wrote for ESPN about Inter. I have Pastore as more likely than Mkhitaryan. That wouldn't shock me if Pastore goes to Inter. Their executive director, Sabatini, has always been a huge fan of his. I'd really love to see Pastore back in Serie A, and I think he really would bring that creativity up front, an extra option for Inter. So that really wouldn't surprise me.
So, moral of the story for Inter fans, if you see tears, that's a good sign. All right. How do you think Juve will handle the development of future Italian stars like Bernardeschi, Spinazzola, and Caldara? They've seemed to hinder the development of others like Giovinco and Rugani.
So, you know, I don't get too hung up in nationalities in general. And I know that Juve historically is always the club that fed the Italian national team the most players. But that really hasn't been the case so much. So I don't get too hung up on this. And I try to look more at the situation. So with Giovinco, I think for him, he was born in Turin. He was always supposed to be the heir apparent to Del Piero. I think there was so much pressure for him specifically at Juve. Juve, to me, gave him a lot of chances to start. It just didn't work out. I think Rugani, look, you know, people that have listened to the podcast know that I haven't been that high on him when he had that stretch of good games. We praised him here, and now he's not playing again because Benatti has been sensational. I think it's really more ability. There's just better players than Rugani on Juve with the way Benatti is playing. The flip side is look at DeCiglio. He's really earned his way back to the starting lineup. Took him a little while, but he's been really good recently. So to me, if Rugani can get back on track, he can get his way back to the pitch. As far as Bernardeschi, he's the typical player that Juve eases in slowly. They also have a ton of options up front. Last week when someone asked me how would Juve hypothetically replace Dybala, if it happens this summer, I think his replacement is going to be Bernardeschi, and he's going to get that number 10. And actually, if that happens, Bernardeschi will be the number 10, the new number 10 who ends up staying at Juve for a while. We've seen Tevez, Pogba, potentially Dybala leave, but I think he'd own it more. But, you know, I don't want people to get too excited with Dybala. I still think he'll do one more year at Juve, but whenever he leaves, Bernardeschi will take over the number 10 and be the new offensive creative player for Juve.
All right, staying on Rugani, David, what would you do if you were Rugani's agent?
It's a great question. So if I was Rugani's agent, this is what I would weigh. I would weigh, you know, what are the odds that Benatia keeps it going? He's got a lot of injury concerns. We know Chiellini is getting older. He has injury concerns as well. Barzagli's older, although it seems he'll come back one more year. So on the plus side, you can kind of wait it out there. Rugani's still young enough, I think he's 23 or 24, that he can wait it out. On the negative side, Juve is going to bring in Caldara from Atalanta in the summer. I've never hid the fact that I think Caldara's flat out better than Rugani now. So if I was Rugani's agent, that's what I would ponder. I don't think it's going to happen in January if he leaves Juve, but those are the factors that I would look if I was representing Rugani.
All right, David, after HBO did one on Gianni Agnelli, any other Serie A personalities you think deserve a documentary?
That was a great question we got on Gianni Agnelli's documentary. I caught a little bit of it on HBO the other night, and I'm going to watch it more. So this is a great question. There's already a great documentary on Silvio Berlusconi that was done by Alan Friedman, a great journalist who actually wrote Berlusconi's authorized biography with him. They did a movie on it, and it's on Netflix. Now, there's definitely quite a bit on Milan. It's focused more on Berlusconi's life, and man, has he had an incredible life so far. There might be a lot more chapters coming up. I would love to see a documentary more on Berlusconi, more specifically on Milan, so more on him and Galliani and the great teams that they built, and also the last few years, which were pretty chaotic. The other one that I'd love to see is a documentary on Moggi. And look, I'm partial. I've met him. I've spent an afternoon with him. We were going to work on a book together. Then it didn't work out for a variety of reasons. But I spent an afternoon with Moggi, and that in and of itself could have been a documentary. Like, I felt like I was kind of in an episode of The Sopranos. I was in an office talking to him, and then we went to the train station in Milan because he had a train to catch. So many people were insulting him. Other people were praising him. It was really a surreal thing. His driver parked right in front of the station, just left the car there with no care in the world. The car was still there when he got out. I saw Moggi hop on a train, and he had basically a whole part of the train for himself with nobody around. It was really incredibly surreal, really a person larger than life. And I know, look, you know, a lot of the younger people know him for Calciopoli, and I think that has to be a huge part of his legacy, but that would be a really interesting documentary. But even before then, I mean, he really is the history of the great Serie A. You know, from Maradona, he didn't sign him, but he managed Maradona for a while. Del Piero, Ibrahimovic, Zidane, you name it. The World Cup team in 2006, he was really close with. Like, if you have followed calcio from the 80s until recently, he's really been in the middle of it. And he's really a hysterically funny character still at his age. So that's a documentary that I'd like to see.
I think a friend of mine would pay good money to see a Giampaolo Pazzini documentary, but that might
be
not
a good one too.
All right, David, do you think some clubs get it wrong hiring so many inexperienced coaches? And I assume you can exclude Zidane from this.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. Here's my take on this. To me, inexperienced coaches are like prospects, and I like to describe them as a blank canvas that you can project whatever you want on. There's not much to base your opinion on them, especially with like former players. You can just project on them their biggest quality. As an example, Gattuso, the more recent one, We associate him with grinta and determination. So you think that's what his teams are going to be like, but that's really not what we've seen from Milan so far. So I think, and I hope that changes because I really like Gattuso. So I think it's just very easy to overrate former players and experienced managers. And most of the time, the inexperienced managers are former players. And I think for clubs, it's very easy because they're a known brand. So I can see why they hire them.
Okay, we got a personal Twitter question again. Nick Scavuzzo from New Zealand asks, over here, Steven Adams is considered an NBA superstar. Do you see it that way, or is this just typical Kiwi hype?
So I could tell that you were laughing along with this. So I think we're kind of on the same page. Definitely not a superstar. Now, I'll say this. You know, I'd say he is one of the better centers in the NBA, but his style of play is really a dying breed. He's not one of these stretch centers that can shoot the three. I think he actually works pretty well with Westbrook because he's more of a bruiser grinder. So I think he's a very good player. I definitely wouldn't call him a superstar. He's almost paid like a superstar. I think he makes about $20 million a year. So I think in New Zealand, they overrate him a little bit. He has a great life story, though. I think he has something like 13 brothers or something. So a good player, don't get me wrong, not superstar. I have a feeling you agree with that, Alex. I know you're a big NBA fan. So.
Yeah, a superstar of tattoos, perhaps. A superstar of getting dirty, maybe. But yeah, centers get paid like superstars nowadays, as you said. But no, not a superstar. All right, David, last Twitter question, and it's a big one. Do you consider Oasis overrated?
Great question. You know, we always like to end on pop culture. Now, let me begin by saying music, films, everything subjective. So this person asked my opinion, but of course, music, you know, there's plenty of bands that I like that I'm sure a lot of people would say are horrendous, overrated, and whatnot. So I would say more than overrated, the word I would use for Oasis is derivative. Clearly, I wouldn't say they're original. They're influenced by a lot of bands and a lot of their songs. You can hear kind of some melodies that you've heard before. Definitely the Beatles, the Kinks are huge influences on them. So I'm not going to call them overrated. I'm going to call them derivative. Now, I'm a big fan of theirs. I also will say they're not, you know, groundbreaking, like say like a band like Radiohead, who really kind of really change music with what they do. Oasis just kind of repeats what was great once. I wouldn't say they don't constantly reinvent themselves like U2 do. I think that's a band that's been around for a long time that always reinvent themselves. So Oasis, of course, right now, they've broken up for a while. I still think Noel Gallagher is one of the best songwriters alive. Granted, some of it is pretty derivative, but I think he could literally roll out of bed and write a great song. He's also probably the best person to interview in rock and roll. His interviews are absolutely hilarious. He does a lot of commenting on football, too. I always get a kick when I'm on Talk Sport, the station in England. I always think that Noel does shows there, and it gives me a lot of pride to do shows on there as well. I'm a huge fan of his. I'm actually going to see him in concert again in February. I saw his show a few years ago. It was fantastic. And his brother, Liam, I think is one of the last great frontmen in rock and roll. I think everything now is so safe and corporate. There's not that many great rock bands. I think he's one of the last great rock and roll frontmen, like a real rock star. There's really not that many left. So thank you all for the great questions. I do have an ask. Alex and I are working very hard around the holidays. So if you're listening, if you're on iTunes right now, listening to us and you enjoy the show, please leave us a rating. Those 5-star reviews go a long way. You just want to leave 5 stars, that's great. If you want to leave a comment, we really appreciate them. So without further ado, we're going to get into the interviews. We're going to preview Juve Roma and talk a little bit about Roma in general with John Solano. And then for the final interview, we're going to continue our series on Milan. We had a great interview on Monday, if you missed it, with Alessandro Iacobone from Italy. And we're going to continue this tonight with Marcello Fargiuele from Montreal. And I think you'll really enjoy the interview. So for our first interview of the night, we are joined by great friend of the show, John Solano. I think this is the 5th time we've had John on. There's no better person to discuss Roma with than with the big match against Juve coming up. We kind of wanted to get a temperature check of to how Roma goes into this match, get his prediction, and preview a little bit the January transfer window with the Giallorossi, with our good friend John. So welcome on board to Calcioland once again. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. So, John, what I wanted to ask you is going into this match, more of an overall assessment of the season for Roma. So tell me what surprised you more so far. The fact that Roma has conceded the least amount of goals in Serie A, despite the fact that they lost Rudiger to Alex's team's Chelsea, or the team's big struggles to score goals. Everyone thought, you know, Di Francesco was known as this great offensive mind. You still have Dzeko, the top goal scorer last season. So tell me which of these two things has surprised you the most.
Oh, unquestionably, I think Roma in the defensive phase has really shocked me. You know, when they came off the heels of the transfer market, I was extremely disappointed because I didn't think, you know, as you mentioned a little bit ago, they didn't replace Rudiger as they should have. I mean, they brought in smaller purchases, Moreno, and they didn't really, you know, reinforce to the degree that I thought they should have. They still have Federico Fazio, and you know, anyone who watched Roma last season, he looked like two different players in a three-man back line and a four-man back line. And knowing Di Francesco, he sticks with that 4-3-3, hardly ever alters it. You know, knowing that he was going to sort of be the one dependent upon to replace Rudiger was, I have to admit, I was extremely apprehensive because there were times last season under Spalletti where he just looked all out of sorts when he was playing with four at the back. He looked very unsure of himself. His positioning was really, really, really poor. That was my biggest knock on him. This season, though, he's probably been one of the best defenders in Serie A. And, you know, I'm not just saying that because I'm, you know, a Roma fan and, I report on the team. But he has been sensational. For him to step up the way he has been just nobody expected this. And, you know, kudos to him because I think nearly everybody was calling for Roma to purchase a central defender when Rudiger left. So unquestionably, them defensively has me absolutely pleasantly surprised. It's given, as you mentioned, given how poor they've been in attack, I don't want to know where they would be right now if their defense wasn't as good as it is right now, because they'd be in huge trouble. They've won five matches this season by a scoreline of 1-0. So the margin for error that they have in defense is so little, and for them to be up to par and be able to carry the entire team this way has just been sensational. I did not expect this in any way, shape, or form.
Very interesting. So while I have you, speaking of the defense, I know you did a lot of reporting on Manolas. I didn't put you in the questions ahead of time, but I know you've done a lot of reporting on Manolas' new contract and the exit clause that he has. What have you heard about that? And sorry, this question just came to mind now as you were talking.
Oh, no, it's fine. So, I tweeted it out the day it came out, or the day he actually signed the renewal. So he has a release clause that's right around 35 million euros. So it's valid in both Italy and abroad. Mm-hmm. Now, the biggest concern was that it wouldn't be valid in Italy. That was the initial reporting, and that's what I had heard. I was told initially that he would have an exit clause and it would only be valid for clubs abroad. Now, having it valid in Italy as well, obviously there's the concern for Roma that, you know, should he get back to the level that he was a couple of seasons ago when he was, again, one of the better defenders in the league, that, I mean, given what we saw in the market in the summer, and David, you can attest to this, but, I mean, 35 million is mm-hmm. peanuts now. I mean, it's next to nothing for the bigger clubs. So there's definitely some worry. Now, granted, his wages, they almost doubled in this new contract. Yep. So you know, it's a long overdue renewal, but, you know, a lot of people, including myself, I mean, we've seen what happened with Roma and Pjanic. You know, yep. He signs a renewal and then he's gone a summer later. So I think this is pretty much the exact same situation, if I'm honest.
Yeah, no, honestly, you took the words out of my mouth when you said in Italy, I thought this is Pjanic all over again. But this, to me, probably is, you know, Manolas wasn't going to sign an extension if they didn't give him this. So, you know, maybe this delays it for a year or whatnot. So thank you for the insight on that. So now let's get back to the current team. You gave us a lot of insight on the defense. As you mentioned, they've won 5 games, 1-0. They've really struggled to score. Do you think the team has maybe too much brute force? And what I mean by that, even Zeko and Nainggolan, maybe not really known for creativity, more for like brute force. I would say Perotti is probably the only completely creative player on the team of the starting caliber players. Do you think this is a problem, and do you kind of agree that there's just not enough creativity on the team?
Oh, undoubtedly. They have no player in attack who's, you know, very technical, which is their biggest problem right now. You know, they've had, you know, in previous seasons, they haven't necessarily had, you know, the technical ability, but they had the, you know, the killer speed. I mean, someone like Gervinho comes to mind where, you know, you're going to get at least a lot of opportunities, whereas now they're not even getting quality opportunities in attack. So that, in my opinion, that's undoubtedly where they have to look in the upcoming transfer market, because I don't think the current recipe that they're using, this can't be sustained over the long haul of the season. It's just not feasible. You know, to be playing, and it's the most frustrating part for me is they've been trying these strikers out wide on the right wing, and it's just, I don't want to call it disastrous, but it's certainly not working. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say disastrous because, you know, relatively speaking, they've had good results, but, you know, given who they could have had, I mean, it's bizarre to me that they still talk about Mahrez to the extent that they do. I feel like, you know, at least once a month or every couple of weeks, they're answering a question about Mahrez from Leicester. And, you know, he was the perfect replacement for Salah. Schick playing him on the right wing doesn't work. De Frel on the right wing doesn't work. These guys are strikers. For them to be, you know, force-fed into that position and that role, it just doesn't work. So it doesn't look like DeFrancesco is going to alter, you know, the formation or his tactics. So absolutely, they need somebody who can create. They just don't have that now. I mean, anyone who watches them, and I've been tweeting it just ad nauseum, but the way Roma labor to create chances, it's almost mind-boggling, because you would think a team with, you know, this much quality, just name for name, would be just bagging goals, but it's not happening at all for them.
Yeah, very interesting. I think you and I were pretty high on De Frel going in, and he's definitely been a bust. So aside from what you mentioned, is there anything else you think Roma's going to look to do in January?
I think they're going to go for a midfielder, particularly one who could play in the central of that midfield. I'm very hard on Didossi. I'm a yep. huge critic of his, just because for what he was and what he ultimately turned out to be, he's been just nothing. He's just been a huge disappointment. Gonalons has been horrific. He's had maybe two or three really, really good matches, but oh my goodness, from the player that he was maybe two or three seasons ago when he was heavily linked to Napoli and he was putting in fantastic performances in France, he is not anywhere near that level anymore. Just horrible wayward passes. He's constantly caught out of position. That's the biggest black hole that Roma have when they're on the pitch. And I hate to say that. I mean, you don't want to say that about a club like them, but both of these guys just have not been up to snuff. They absolutely, undoubtedly, 100% need to get, I don't want to say, you know, a classical Regista in the center there, but they need somebody who can, you know, add a bit of solidity to the spine. It's just lacking so much. I mean, outside of Strootman and Nainggolan, that midfield is really, really lacking. And you look to the summer, just some of the opportunities that were available to them, some of the players. I mean, Torreira comes to mind. Yeah. It's just, it's a head scratcher, in my opinion, for them to depend on Gonalons and De Rossi to the extent that they have. And I mean, I was all for it when it happened, but the sale of Paredes now to Zenit does not look good, given how much they've struggled in that role.
Very interesting. So I know one player you've been reporting a lot on is the Turkish winger Under. He hasn't played much, comes in more as a sub. Do you think he's going to stay at Roma this January, or do you think he'll be loaned out?
No, I mean, 99.9%, I think he'll remain. You know, he's still adapting to Italy. He's still learning the language. He's having some problems in that regard. Now, granted, he's still taking lessons and learning, but this guy is still young. You know, generally, I believe that, you know, a player in a similar situation should be sent to another club and play as much as they can. But for someone like him, this is his first time at a big club. I think training with the team, just being around the team is going to benefit him more than going to another club in Italy and playing a lot. So, in my opinion, I mean, we've spoken to his agent dozens of times. I'm almost certain he'll stay.
Very interesting. So I'm going to put you on the spot, John. Earlier in the show, we made our predictions for the match. Our Oracle from Italy, 1,000 names, has it a draw between Juve and Roma. I'm a little bit bullish on Juve. I think this is the time of year that Allegri's team is going to go into gear. I think Juve is going to win. What's your take on the match?
Well, if a draw is on the table, I'll snatch it right now. In my opinion, for Roma, that'd be a fantastic result. Given, you know, anyone who watched that that Juve-Inter game, I thought Juve were so much better. I thought they were so, so unlucky not to get the result there. Gosh, it's tough. You look how strong Roma have been defensively, but then that counters with how poor they've been in attack. Given how just the form Juve have been in lately, especially defensively, I think they're really, 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 really going to struggle to score. In my opinion, I think Juve are going to win 1-0. That would be my guess. But I mean, if a draw is on the table, I think that'd be an incredible result, frankly, especially given how much Roma have struggled lately.
Yeah, Benatti has been really incredible. He's playing as well as he did as Roma. I'll even say he looks like when he was at Udinese, when he was just really incredible.
He's looked great. Honestly, he was a punchline last season. He was terrible.
He was.
And
Yep. The
way he stepped up has been just sensational. It's such a huge regret the way that played out between him and Roma. He really is a good player. I thought it was unfair the amount of stick he got last season. I mean, he hardly played at Bayern. He hardly played. So, I thought it was going to take some time for him to adapt to, you know, just being a regular. But he's been sensational. I've been so impressed with him.
Totally agree. So, John, let's close on this. I didn't mention it in the intro. So, you know, we've had you on a lot. People know you as the person that runs the really great site, IS Roma Press, which I think is a great destination for everyone who follows Roma in English. And you also have a podcast that you do that's really, really interesting. So tell us what you have coming up on both the site and the podcast.
Well, with January looming, obviously, as you can attest, everyone gets the transfer market fever. So we're trying to, we're going to be diving into that quite a bit. It's a lot different with Monchi at the helm than it is Sabatini. Monchi, he likes to talk a lot. He's readily available to the media. Anyone who, is familiar with him, he's on WhatsApp, like 24/7. It's obscene. And if you ask him a question, generally he'll answer. So trying to follow his line of thinking, where he's looking, that's where our heads at are now. And just trying to, just give the latest news, especially right now in Roma. It's a very interesting period. The last month has not been good. Fans are really, really divided, which, if you're running a website, it's great, just material, just get everyone's temperature on, what everyone's thinking. So, that's where we're at now. And we'll see what happens in January. Like you, David, we'll be very, very busy.
Excellent. So, John, I want to thank you. You've been a fantastic guest on our show this year. We really appreciate all your contributions. So, Buon Natale, Happy New Year, and we look forward to chatting with you in 2018.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy holidays to you guys, too. And this podcast has been absolutely fantastic. I'm really happy for the success you guys have, and you absolutely deserve it. It's fully warranted.
Well, it's because we have great guests like you. That's really the
main reason.
So thanks again for being on, John. A real pleasure chatting with you this year. Take care.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Okay, guys. So as I promised, we're going to continue our series of interviews on Milan. If you missed Monday, we had a fantastic interview with Alessandro Iacobone from Italy. And tonight we are joined by the president of Milan's fan club in Montreal. He's also a contributor to Calcio Finanza, first-time guest on Calcioland, Marcello Fuggiuele. And we are thrilled that you're joining us. So welcome to Calcioland, my friend.
Thank you, David, for having me. It's a pleasure.
Okay, so let's talk first off. You have a fantastic fan club. I really like reading what you do. My dear friend, my favorite person on Twitter is Nick Criniti. Shout out to him, @SEM_Nicky. Fantastic guy, is a member of your fan club. So tell us a little bit about your fan club and what type of events you guys do to support Milan.
Sure. So basically, the Milan Club of Montreal has been in existence since the 1980s. And in the past few years, it was inactive as the previous admins were getting older and they lacked the energy and motivation to keep it going. So a new administration has taken over since May of 2016 to basically relaunch it and get it into, quote unquote, the modern times with social media. And try to also recruit some new younger members as well. We have a large following of Milan fans in Montreal, even though the past few years haven't been very successful on the pitch. But Milan is still a well-known brand all over the world. And now our job is basically to resurrect that passion for the team with our activity. And basically what we do is we have viewing parties. And we decided strategically to focus just on four marquee matchups. So it would be against Juventus, Inter, Napoli, and Roma. And also we're getting together to watch Coppa Italia matches as well. For the Europa League, we didn't get together for the group stage. But now, because Milan made it to the knockout stage, we're going to organize something for that as well. So basically, we decided to limit the viewing to these matches only to make it like an event, something sort of to look forward to. What we've noticed is, given how easy it is to watch matches today, whether on TV, online, it would be kind of difficult to get a good turnout for less marquee matchups. Let's say, Milan against Crotone, for example. You're not going to get so excited to go watch. You're like, oh, do I want to drive all the way down there to get together for it? Maybe not. So in addition to viewing parties, we've also organized a FIFA tournament. This is for the younger guys in the group. They basically bring their consoles to the bar and they'll do like a sort of a March Madness bracket system thingy going. And we had a winner for that as well last year. So they really liked that event. And we're going to do it again this winter. Because I don't know how it is in Boston, but in Montreal, when it's cold, the winter's long, and we need to keep ourselves busy doing some fun stuff too.
Yeah, no, it's bad here, but I think you guys have it even a little bit worse. So, Marcello, one of the main, there's two reasons why I wanted to have you on. I want to continue the discussion we had with Alessandro Iacobone on all the ownership situation at Milan. I also want to talk a little bit about the Serie A TV rights abroad because you've done incredible work covering that. So before we get to the TV rights, let's talk a little bit about Milan's ownership situation. You've covered this a lot. You and I have talked about it offline as well. So very simply, on a scale of 1, with being not concerned at all, to 10, to being incredibly concerned and freaking out over Milan's ownership situation, especially the loan due to Elliott next year, how concerned are you on a scale of 1 to 10?
I would say a 3. I think the biggest problem in all this, ever since they tried to close the purchase, is the capital controls in China. These restrictions have been so, how can I put it, handcuffed them to an extent where, first of all, the initial investor group, which was part of the Sino-Europe Sports, that got dissolved primarily for this reason. So the reason I still have confidence in the ownership group is that they still managed to, quote-unquote, circumvent these restrictive capital controls with offshore funding, which for me is testimony to their resolve and their financial capacity to act as capital, because otherwise they should have just abandoned ship the moment they felt they wouldn't have the backing of the Chinese government to allow them to export the capital, but they still pursue this anyway. Now, in regards to the loan to Elliott, for me, it was always a short-term measure. I mean, it's an 18-month loan. I mean, when I got my mortgage on my house, I had 25 years to pay it back. And I don't know about you, but I haven't heard of many people that borrow 300 million euros and have to repay it in about 18 months. So I think it was like a plan B. They just were stuck and Elliott came to the rescue. And we all know hedge funds love to take additional risk, hence why they'll charge higher interest rates and also have more onerous guarantees in order to protect their financing in case of default. So I still believe from the moment they had to resort to Elliott for lack of better options, I think Fasano was already at work to figure out, okay, how are we going to pay this guy back and get a longer-term loan so they have breathing room. So that's why I still have confidence in the group. I think it's just more a setback than problems that they had that they won't be able to fulfill their obligation.
Very, very interesting there. So you already gave us a pretty big hint, probably something not discussed enough, are the restrictions of capital leaving China. Are there any other big misconceptions out there on the whole ownership situation on Milan, in your opinion?
I would say it would be more the fear of the unknown. I mean, as much as I follow this situation, I'm by no means a journalist or an expert. So even myself, we all know it's not just Yonghong Lee who decided to buy Milan all by himself. There are some investors backing him. So the fact that we don't know who they are, it starts spreading a bit of the doubts and the rumors. And anybody that had just a hint of any doubt or skepticism, seeing all this news about persistent doubts and problems and things like that, the skepticism, it rises to unprecedented levels. So, I mean, everyone's entitled to their opinion. There's nothing wrong with someone having any doubts about what's going on. I remember myself with Mr. B at the time. Even I was a bit skeptical how he presented it, because at that moment, I believe he was going to put no money of his own into the investment, whereas Yonghong Lee actually put a bit of his own money. He borrowed a lot. And we're also having some other investors that are backing him up, which at this time we don't know. And I feel there's this fear of the unknown that's fueling a little bit of this. And the other thing I'd like to add is, I don't know if you feel the same way, it might sound a bit controversial, but from the Italian perspective, I find a lot of times when they're talking about this new owner, they often refer to his origin. So you're always saying Chinese this, Chinese that. I always wondered, had the owners been American, Canadian, or Australian, would there be so much focus on where they come from and talk about their origins as much as they do with the Chinese. So I wonder sometimes if that doesn't play a little bit, especially in Italy, this whole thing about the Chinese.
You know, that's a great point. And look, you know, in my approach to the whole Milan thing is I've had Alessandro on, I have you, I have a few more guests next week. My whole approach is I want to hear all you guys, what you have to say. I have my own opinions. They've probably already changed a little bit based on the interviews. We have a few more coming. So after it's all said and done, I'm going to give my two cents, which, you know, aren't any more valid or better than yours, but I think you do make a good point with the Chinese. Like in Italy, you know, too, in recent years, Chinese people have been buying up a lot of the bars and restaurants in Italy. When I go back to Padova, my hometown, a lot of them don't have Italian owners anymore, and I think there's a little bit of resentment towards that. So I think there is something to what you say there with all the talk on the origins. So that's actually a good point. And when I give my final thoughts on the whole situation, I'm definitely going to include that because I appreciate your insight into that. So now let's shift gears. Let's talk a little bit about the Serie A TV rights abroad. You've been covering this for a while. You've really done great work. So I mentioned at the top, you work on the English page on Calcio Finanzia, which has always been a great website in Italy, and I'm glad they are doing this in English as well. So you recently interviewed the CEO of Infront. His name is Luigi De Servio, and Infront acts as an advisor to Serie A in regards to the international rights for Serie A. So you had a very good in-depth interview on this. I'll tweet the link after we post the podcast. So tell me specifically what you think, especially viewers in North America, can expect once the new deal for the TV rights goes into effect.
Sure. So firstly, I'd just like to mention just the fact that Serie A, for the first time in a long time, didn't automatically award the international rights to the highest bidder is significant. In the past, once the Lega Calcio sold their rights to the highest bidder and collected their money, they didn't really care what the rights holder would do afterwards. Just as an example, here in Canada for the Coppa Italia, it's 2 years in a row now we're unable to watch it. And it's unfortunate for all the fans, not just Milan fans, but any Calcio fan is unable to watch the match because it's not broadcast either in English, not even on the Rai. And the rights holder, which in this case is B4 Capital, who acquired the international rights to the Copa, never found a TV network in Canada to broadcast it. While in the U.S., Gold TV acquired the rights, but I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, David, the games are only broadcast on a channel which is not in HD. Are you aware, like for Gold TV?
Yeah, and it's a very hard station to find. Like, I'm not a stream type of guy, so to be honest, I very rarely get to watch Serie A. So, yeah, you're definitely right. That's definitely Gold TV. Definitely issues. They owned all the rights to Serie A a long time ago, but, yeah, it's still an issue, so you're definitely right there.
Yeah. So now, for the benefit of the listeners, if I may use an analogy, and seeing as we are both of Italian descent, imagine Serie A is a winemaker, and instead of selling the wine directly to the consumer, instead they'll wholesale it to a distributor. So once the distributor pays for the wine, whatever they decide to do with it is basically their own business. So in an ideal world, logic would dictate they would sell it to as many people and as many places in the world as possible to expose it and grow its popularity. And at the same time, obviously, make a significant markup to compensate all their legwork that goes into the selling and distribution of the product. However, if for whatever reason, this distributor would decide to keep the wine in their own cellar, it's basically their right. And at this point, whoever made the sale, which would be Serie A, they made their money, so they're happy, and it pretty much ends there. So now, the fact that it's been awarded, basically the rights for the international broadcasting of the games to IMG, a company based in New York, who, according to reports, actually offered less money than what MP Silva did, I have a feeling that you could only conclude the league wanted a change in direction. And in fact, even Marco Fassoni said that for the first time, the qualitative aspects of the bid were given more importance than the quantitative ones. And in my conversation with Luigi De Siervo, he reiterated pretty much the same thing, where IMG really impressed them with their plan, both for TV and online, and their primary objective in order to close the gap in terms of the revenues between La Serie A and La Liga. They want to get as many viewers as possible to watch the games. And that's a strategic change in direction. And I'm hoping for all the listeners in North America, we're going to finally get access to the games as often as we want in an easy fashion as well.
Very, very interesting, and I agree with you. It's a great development. I think you said it best. They just take the money and be happy and then have a long-term view of saying, let's try to really promote our product and we'll benefit in the long run. And I think this has a lot to do with the foreign owners being involved. I think especially Pallotta deserves a lot of credit. He's been very involved with this. I think he has more of a long-term view. So let's close on this. This is actually a little bit funny, but really a great development. So, you know, we talked a lot about the rights for the games in English here in North America, but there's always been Rai International who broadcast the games in Italian. Dating back to the late 80s, early 90s, when I was still living in Italy, I'd come on vacation in the U.S., and I could watch the games on Rai International. The quality of the video, of the image, hasn't improved at all since then when I watch now. It's probably gotten worse. But you were very involved, and I think you were one of the people that really helped push this, and it's been announced that Rai is going to finally broadcast games in HD starting next season. So give us a little bit of background in this and how you were involved in making that happen.
Sure. So first of all, as much as I would love to take credit, and you're making me sound like I'm a senior, I would just like to say we probably were the ones that at the grassroots made a lot of noise. However, the people who should get the credit is the league itself. On the actual offer for the tender, they actually put the conditions, and if you read the fine print, they actually stipulated that for the, what they call il pacchetto, which is the package for broadcasting matches abroad for the Italian communities, they must be broadcast in HD, and it was actually written black and white. So I had seen this, but I kept pretty much this to myself because I figured I don't know how many people would actually go through the trouble of going on Lega Calcio and search within that hundreds of PDFs to look at the actual invite to tender. So I'm like, I'm going to use the St. Thomas Doubtful Thomas thingy where I have to see it to believe it. So then having my conversation with Luigi De Siervo, we're talking, and one of the last things I mentioned was about Rai, and he tells me in Italian that la Rai è obbligata di trasmettere in alta definizione. So hearing it from the horse's mouth, you know it's pretty much official, even though it hasn't been announced, but someone at his level to see it that emphatically, then we knew it's like for real. And basically, he confirmed what was actually on the tender. So I think that's the like we made the noise, we made the issue aware, and just like to take a quick moment to thank Rocco Fasano from Toronto. He loves your podcast. We always listen to it, and he was very helpful. He wrote a letter that was published in Toronto, in Montreal, in New York, to get a reaction from Rai, and even Marco Messina from IFTV, he helped out too. To again, it was all about making noise, and I think they reached the point where they even heard about our petition. We even had a petition that many people had signed to get the awareness going. And basically, if I could use an analogy, it's like the car was stuck in the mud. We started pushing, and then Lega Calcio just came with a tow truck and just took it out for us, but we had started a little bit of the work. So having the clause and the obligation to broadcast in HD, they had pretty much no choice. So that's how we got to that point. And now it's great news for the Italian community. However, my only concern is that is it a little too late? This should have been done, I would say, at least 5 years ago. Because I've heard of many people, even the most hardcore of Italians, that don't even subscribe to Rai anymore. Because when most of your channels are in HD and then you switch to Rai, it's like the image is blurry. And now TVs are so huge, you'll get like 50-inch TV and you're watching an SD signal on it. It's terrible.
Yeah.
So I think
I like to say it's like taking a time travel machine to go from the premiere
right.
to watch in Serie A on Rai. It's like taking the time machine back 40 years.
No, exactly. So another note that wasn't really mentioned anywhere, again, looking at the invitation to tender, one of the rights that Rai did acquire, and I was happy to read about this, is for the Coppa Italia. Rai actually can broadcast the games from the semifinals to the final and also the Supercoppa for the next 3 years. So that's a great initiative on their part. It is something that we did complain about, because if you think about it, why is it that Rai in Italy is broadcasting the Coppa Italia as we speak right now, and us Italians living abroad, we can't even watch it on a Rai channel? It didn't make any sense. So I think they smartened up and they realized the demand was there. So that's a bit of a good news for the Italian community.
Sure is. So you know what? I think I'm going to forgive Rocco because he did this with you. And shout out to our friend Marco Messina. Great job. And you as well. Because the minute Rocco announced he was going to see the Champions League final in Cardiff, I knew Buffon had no chance of lifting the cup because, man, that guy brings bad luck if he goes to a match. So I'm going to forgive him for that and for doing this. So great stuff. So, Marcello, look, I want to thank you so much for coming on. You shared a great perspective on Milan's ownership. You did great work covering everything on the Serie A TV rights. You helped bring us Rai in HD. So I want to thank you. I hope to meet you in person at an event at the Montreal Fan Club along with my great friend, Nicky Criniti. So thank you so much for coming on. Buon Natale, and thanks for being such a great guest.
Thanks for having me. An open invitation, David. You know, we'll always welcome you here with our friend Guru. He'll be thrilled to see you too. And Buon Natale and Happy New Year to Alex and yourself and your family, and all the best in the new year. And keep up the great work.
Thank you so much. Marcello, it was really a pleasure. So thank you. Great job.
Thank you.